Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Jem Sporletter. He retired from a principal of Lincoln High School in Walla Walla in 2014. Under Jem's leadership, Lincoln High School became a trauma-informed school, gaining national attention due to a dramatic drop in out-of-school suspensions, increased graduation rates, and the number of students going on to post-secondary education. These dramatic changes at Lincoln caught the attention of Jamie Redford, who spent a year filming the documentary Paper Tigers, which tells the Lincoln story. The documentary was released in May 2015. Jem is currently working as a trauma-informed coach and consultant, as well as a trainer with the Children's Resilience Initiative based in Walla Walla. His travels have taken him all over the U.S. Jem is married and has 3 daughters and 6 granddaughters. Welcome to the podcast, Jem.
Thank you, Dana. Appreciate it.
So tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I think the greatest trench that I could say that I've been in as far as my career was when I asked to be transferred from my dream job at the middle school, in which I was principal and in my 22nd year. And had every intention of retiring after 30 years in the same school. And I was hiring alumni students. I felt very good where we were at as a school. It was just great times. And I read a report on our alternative programs, written by a very gifted consultant. And I was very disturbed at what I read. And thought that the district needed to get somebody over there to help those kids. And I'm a person of faith. And so I had that gnawing feeling that I couldn't sleep. And finally my wife says, well, why don't you go? And my first response was, well, heck, I'm not leaving my dream job. And finally realized that I needed to go. And so I went down and met with the superintendent and asked if he could transfer me to the alternative high school. At that time, it was called Payne Alternative High School. And, I knew the reputation. I mean, I've been in the community long enough. I felt it got a pretty bad rap. I also knew that definitely it was a school that kids were dumped into, you know, that weren't making it elsewhere. And I always felt for that, but didn't understand how out of control the school was until I got over there. So I don't know if it was a trench or a really deep hole, but when I got there, my chin was glued to my chest. I just couldn't believe the disregard for any authority at all. And in the school at that point, the gangs had control and was very unsafe. You could feel the tension. We had several gangs in the building, and a spark turned into a forest fire real quick. And I honestly, it was so out of control, and I just didn't know how I was going to get that control. And my whole intent was to try to create an environment in which those kids felt self-worth and valued, and create a safe environment. It came out in the report that the kids didn't feel safe coming to school, and staff didn't feel safe coming to school. And so my goal was to create that safe environment, that culture. And my goodness, I had a heck of a time just being accepted by the kids, because I created rules and boundaries, and they weren't used to that, and they didn't like the rules. And there were moments when I thought, man, did I make the right decision? Am I going to be able to pull this thing through? Mm-hmm. And so definitely felt like I was in the trench for, I'd say it took me 4 or 5 months before I finally felt a little bit of a turn where the kids started to accept me and knew that I was there to promote them versus punish them or degrade them. And, mm-hmm. and we finally started to get a glimpse of light, and that was huge.
And then you told me that you went to a ACEs conference. You were introduced to adverse childhood experiences. Was that shortly, that first year, was that shortly after you started at Lincoln, or was it after a couple of years?
No, I was very student oriented. My career, I was known as a teacher and then an administrator that really connected with kids. And but I was traditional in my discipline. And so when I went over to Lincoln, people said, well, how did you get control? And I said, the only way I knew how, I carried a big stick and met with law enforcement, met with probation, really had to call upon their support. And I had a saying, I'm embarrassed to say it, but to try to get control, I had a saying that if we had a gang fight going, mm-hmm. cuff them and stop them. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted it to be very clear that wasn't going to be acceptable anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it actually, Dana, it took 3 years before I felt safe enough to go to that conference. So my exposure to the ACEs was after my third year at, towards the end of my third year at Lincoln, and had no clue what I was going to be honest with you. I was invited, and I, at that point, you know, I felt that it was safe enough for me to be gone for a day or two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And had you been read on anything about the ACEs study or heard anything about trauma-informed practices prior to going to the conference?
I was exposed to the ACEs. I thought it was interesting. In fact, we actually had somebody come and give a class presentation about ACEs. Mm-hmm. And I found it interesting, but to be honest with you, it didn't grab me. Mm-hmm. like when I went to the conference, it was Hope to Resilience conference, and Dr. John Medina was the keynote speaker. Mm-hmm. And you know, to this day, I mean, it was 2010. To this day, I really have a hard time trying to articulate what happened to me in 90 minutes. All I can tell you is that Dr. Medina hit me with a bolt, light a bolt, mm-hmm. or a lightning bolt. He was able to somehow get me to be able to reflect within my own practices and see that I was punishing kids and not teaching kids with my discipline. Mm-hmm. And I had never heard of toxic stress, and he hit that thing on the nail and hit it home. And man, then I knew, my goodness, I got toxic stress kids every day. Mm-hmm. He talked about the power of relationship, connecting, and responding. And the phrase what was popular now, you know, it's everywhere about when we approach kids, it's rather what's wrong with you, what's happened to you. And that was a very new phrase at that time. But I there was just no way I was going to punish kids. And, mm-hmm. And so when I went back, I got back to Lincoln, unfortunately I was like a bull in a china shop, and I told my staff what I learned and said, this one's going to be different. It's not going to be the same. And shared about the power of the relationship, that we got to really get, we were focused on the relationship piece, but just very traditional and other mm-hmm. practices. And just share that those practices were going to need to change. But I had such an amazing staff that it wasn't a hard sell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You never have 100%, but I had the majority, and they really followed the lead and contributed. And people ask me, well, how long did it take before you started to see a difference? And it took the first kid that came in that I changed my approach. And that's what my teachers were saying. My gosh, we started talking to our kids and asking questions, and they started telling us, and we were just hearing these unbelievable stories of what these kids were coming from and mm-hmm. going through, that it was fuel to keep the fire burning within us to want to learn more and mm-hmm. Help them more.
Yeah, and that's pretty amazing how you were able to just changing your approach to discipline, right? Just changing how you talk to kids. And I think that's something that a lot of schools are trying to embrace now that have been using trauma-informed practices. But it takes that whole school shift, right? It takes that mindset of not using the traditional discipline that you were using. And before you came to this realization, going to the conference, I imagine you had a high rate of out-of-school suspensions and expulsions as well.
Yeah, I had 850 out-of-school suspension days the year before I implemented a trauma-informed approach. And, I'd have to go back and look at the data, but we dropped those suspension rates clear down to, I think, 325, because mm-hmm. we're still dealing with a lot of gang stuff. Mm-hmm. But every year after that, our kids' A scores, the average A score every year went up, and our discipline continuously came down. I mean, I think the last year, I think our referrals for the entire year was only like 125, 130. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hardly any suspensions. And, mm-hmm. and the kids, they responded and contributed. Mm-hmm. Our goal was to transform their lives and to really help them. And I think in reflection, they transformed our lives. Mm-hmm. They gave back much more than what we were able to give.
Yeah. So how did the word of what was happening at Lincoln get out such that Jamie Redford wanted to make a documentary and spend a year getting to know what was happening and following up with students at Lincoln?
Well, I'm kind of a data guy, and I really tracked all of our data. And so I took the first year or the last year as a traditional approach. I took our data there, and then I matched it with all of our data as a trauma-informed school. Mm-hmm. And it was so significant. We have a community champion, Terry Barilla, mm-hmm. and she helped me through this journey, and she helped me set up some PD for my staff and all. And she let Jane Stevens from Aces Too High mm-hmm. know about our journey. And Jane actually flew up to Walla Walla and spent a few days with us. And she wrote an article on on Lincoln and our new approach. And the article went viral.
Okay.
And, you know, I had no idea what viral meant. It was like getting hit with a tidal wave, but went to 32 different countries. I mean, I got emails from Russia, China, Australia. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. And to be honest with you, I had some frustrations about that because we were being highlighted as a school of compassion, and I thought to myself, why would you go viral for being a school of compassion? Shouldn't we all be schools of compassion? And, but it was through that article. In fact, about the second year, it took off again. It went viral a second time.
Wow. So
I think there's been over 1 million hits on Aces Too High. But that's what, when Jamie was deciding to do a film on trauma and ACEs and all, he went to speak to Jane Stevens. And, you know, she's such a national leader. And she told him that he needed to contact us and come see us. And then he went and spent time with Dr. Folletti, co-founder of the ACE study. And Dr. Folletti also told him that he needed to come to Walla Walla and see what we were doing at Lincoln. We had no idea that we were the first high school in the country to do the work. So and there's a little humor there that when Jamie called me, he called me on a Saturday, and my wife kind of overheard the conversation and said, "Who? Sounds like somebody wants to come film you." And I said, "Yeah." And she says, "Well, who is it?" And I said, "Some Jamie guy."
Yeah.
I said, he's really a nice guy, but I'm not going to turn my kids over to somebody just to start filming. And so Jamie and I, that was kind of a humorous conversation that we would have, in that first off, I didn't know he was related to Robert Redford, you know, which doesn't make any difference. But when he came to Lincoln, I was watching him and the camera crew very intently, and he shared with me that he was watching me and the staff very intently on our interactions with kids and how the kids were interacting with us. And I'll tell you what, I was in a very protective mold, and within before the day was out, Jamie won me over. I mean, I'd like to acknowledge him. You know, we just lost him a couple of weeks ago, and I really want to honor him for what he taught me, and especially his kindness. The man, he loved our kids, and our kids knew that he loved them. And even after the film, the way he kept track of those that were featured in the film, and for much longer than what one could expect for how busy he is and going from project to project. At first we were going to be part of a film. We were going to be a spoke in the wheel. So we were going to be a segment of a film that he was working on. And after January that year, he just came in, shut the door and sat down and said, Lincoln's a gold mine. You know, he taught the kids how to film themselves. And he goes, "We're getting footage. It's just incredible." And he says, "We've decided to make Lincoln a standalone film. And we're going to do the other film, which was Resilience." He says, "We're going to do that second." So, okay. So that's, again, you know, who could have known and who could have expected that that would even happen? And who could expect the impact that Paper Tigers has had, not only nationally, but internationally? I believe that Paper Tigers has opened up the national conversation around trauma-informed schools. I really do. I think it continues to open up conversations, and we know that it's sweeping Europe now by storm. Scotland wants to be the first country to be trauma-informed. So Jamie's legacy, he left an incredible legacy.
Yeah, definitely. And as I mentioned in the pre-chat, you know, I was first introduced to Paper Tigers in fall of 2017 when we screened it at a cinema for a professional development day, and then spent the rest of the day discussing trauma-informed practices and learning about the ACEs study. And I really didn't know much about the ACEs study until then. And then at a subsequent school I was at in early 2019, they were implementing district training on trauma-informed practices and screened the film there as well. How do you think the trauma-informed practices are becoming more consistently used in schools since Paper Tigers came out? As you said, there's still a lot of districts that are discovering the film, both in the U.S. and Canada, but now it's, you know, it's traveling across to Europe and other continents. So what do you see happening in the next few years, especially in relation to the increase of ACEs in youth with COVID?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to be able to kind of feel that national pulse. And so I've been able to watch the wave build. And so I would say we have a wave that has been building across our country. Mm-hmm. And it's every year it builds more and more momentum. And some of the things that I've seen, some very encouraging changes, not only that schools are moving in this direction, but leaders are moving in this direction. So it started where I started to hear principals stand up and say, this is the direction our school is going. And now I'm hearing superintendents of districts standing up and saying, this is a direction that we're going. And what makes that so important is it creates safety around teachers knowing that they can move in this direction because it is a different approach. And with the kids' emotional learning comes first, because we know if we can get the emotional, social and emotional learning entrenched with a student, it helps them to learn how to regulate, and now we can move that into the learning environment, and these kids can learn and do very well. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting glimpses of states that are the state officials now in a few of our states. I know Kansas and their state superintendent of schools is taken a very active role in the trauma-informed movement. So state officials are starting to come out and share. And I know the White House has had a couple of hearings on trauma-informed practices. So I'm very encouraged with the wave. I think COVID has held us up, obviously. It's kind of thrown a curveball at us, and we need to work around that. And I think schools are really trying to figure out how to keep that connection at a distance. And it's hard to do it well. Mm-hmm.
What do you think it took the release of Paper Tigers for schools and districts to really understand the need to have a different discipline approach?
Well, I think when Paper Tigers really exposed the lives of the five kids, mm-hmm. And their journeys, what I love about Paper Tigers and what I think Jamie was just so cr- creative is that it's not a Lincoln story. Mm-hmm. When people watch Paper Tigers, it's a lens to their own students. So very few people that watch Paper Tigers, most all of them say, that's our kids. Mm-hmm. And they can put the names on the Lincoln kids of their kids. And I think that's the power of the film. And I think that's why it's been a real driving force behind the trauma-informed movement within our schools and even outside of our schools, in social services and juvenile justice. I think it's played a significant role in those areas as well.
Mm-hmm. I really think it's encouraging how, as you said, this wave is sweeping across the nation off to the international market as well. But what would you say, if there is a movement at a school, however, not everybody is on board, right? You say sometimes there are principals or superintendents who, want to implement this, but maybe staff are set in their ways or vice versa. You know, staff want to implement this, yet the principal doesn't see the need. So what would you say to a school like that?
I'm fortunate that the schools that contact me are schools that want to move in this direction. Mm-hmm. But in my early outings, my biggest learning was I would have principals bring me in for a training, and I'd show up for a training, and they'd get the staff together, and then they'd take off.
Yeah.
And so I definitely know that the movement will not happen unless the principal leads it. And he's got to be, or she's got to be out front. They've got to be the voice that's out front saying that this is, it's not whether we're going in this direction. We are going in this direction. And the schools that I'm aware of that have really embraced this approach, they're all experiencing all the wonderful data that comes with it. And if you go to talk to their staff, you couldn't pull those staff out with a crane. Once the staff gets to teach this way and connect this way, they won't risk leaving that position. Mm-hmm. And that's something I see in common. The downside is that this still is still a champion's effort in moving in this direction. I certainly would not call it that we've reached any point where it's a common approach in schools. Mm-hmm. It's still somebody out there that gets it and is willing to step out of their comfort zone and lead the journey. So my hope is that that I'll at least see the day that it becomes the way we do business with our kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, as you said, it's it's a champion. It doesn't take it works pretty well once you decided, right, to start speaking to your students differently and handling discipline differently. But as you said, it has to be everybody on board. And at Lincoln, everybody was able to implement those changes. So as you said, the principal has to lead from the top and reiterate to the staff how important it is to make the changes and really take this to heart of how we're interacting with our students. What have you been up to since the pandemic in terms of your consulting work and working with trauma-informed practices and just districts that want to know more about how to implement it?
I'm kind of like everybody else that is in a consulting role. And so most of all my things that are virtual. Mm-hmm. I did a full day training yesterday with the school in Kansas, and this morning I did a partial training with a with the school here in Washington State. I'm excited. I'm just about ready. Well, actually, we've already had a launch, and then my contribution is just about ready to take off. And that is, I'm working with a gentleman out of the UK, and we've got 50 youth workers from Sudan and 50 from Nigeria that we will be training to be trauma coaches for their communities. And I'm real excited about that. That's something new, and we have the capacity to be at 13,000 within 3 years. He has reached clear into Africa, China, or India, most of the Middle East. So I'm looking forward to that chapter, and you can imagine the trauma that some of these people have gone through in these countries. And so hopefully we can really support them, and they can have impact on their communities and help people find hope and healing.
Yeah, that's amazing how it's, it's going into these communities in you know, countries we wouldn't even expect would know about paper tigers, or, just being able to implement this, like, as you said, in youth services and in social services as well. What would you say is the most important thing out of this conversation that you'd like listeners to remember?
I think the most important message that I can give is because we have a movement, and because we got this wave going, we also have misconceptions around what trauma-informed really is. Mm-hmm. And I call it the power of one. As soon as I truly understand the power of one, which is me, the power of me connecting with those that I serve, that I have the opportunity to help change a life path. Mm-hmm. And, we know from the research that one caring adult can change the life path of those that we serve. And when we come together as a school and we understand the power of one, then and we want to be that one, then it becomes who we are versus what we do. Mm-hmm. And so all our conversations are driven by that statement, because we're talking about the kids that are surfacing in the school that we're concerned about. We're talking about how to put more positive adults around them, how to consciously create more positive interactions and conversations. And so when it's who I am, then it actually becomes a part of who I am as far as how I do life. For me today, I mean, it's when I'm traveling, it's my Uber driver. I want to connect with them somehow. I want to have some kind of positive interaction to let them know I appreciate them and appreciate the job that they do. And the person that cleans my room, motel, I want to make sure I try to have some. If I don't see them, then I leave them a note. Let them know how much I appreciate it. And to me, it's just a greater lifestyle looking at trying to bring some sunshine into a person's day versus all the crud that we see on TV and the hatred and the divisiveness. It's painful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's those random acts of kindness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sure, listeners are wondering, do you have contact with some of the students that were filmed in Paper Tigers? And do you have a particular story about any of those students and kind of follow up that you'd like to share?
You know, I was in much more communication with them when they were younger. Mm-hmm. now that they're older and have kind of moved on in their own lives, I would say I have contact, not as frequently, but Diana, who's in the film, she's probably the one I keep the most contact with. And when she got out of high school, you know, she had a difficult time. I mean, she was working on her anger issues, but her anger would get her in a bind when she'd get a job, and then she'd lose her job because she'd go off on somebody. But I'll tell you, that girl can get knocked down off of her feet, but by God, she keeps getting up. She finally landed in a position that she just absolutely loves. She's actually a crew supervisor now. She's had three promotions. I'm just so proud of her, and she's still in a situation where she has zero support from family. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to support her and be someone to help be a cheerleader for her on the side. Mm-hmm. There's so many other kids, you know. My youngest daughter went into being a foster parent, and her husband received a baby at 5 days old, and my daughter called me and shared she had the coolest caseworker and how much she appreciated the caseworker and how helpful she was. And they got to talking, and she said that she graduated from Lincoln. And my daughter said, "Oh, my dad is Jim Spoiler," and it was just so cool to know that Cheyenne had gone on and gotten her degree in social worker, and that she's out there doing a great job. And I had one here at the house working with me yesterday. I needed some help with some work and had one come over. I got two that are help taking over my website. They're getting their degree in computer science. Those are just great. It just brings you great joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those students are like family, right? I mean, they, as you said, like Diane is, you're still supporting her many years now after she graduated and after you retired, but keeping in touch with those students and supporting them throughout challenges that they're having in their adult life, but having that community with your students, they're helping you also with tech and website. It just, it goes a long way to show how, you know, you really made that difference in their lives as a principal.
Yeah, I got it. I took both of them out to breakfast, and they assessed my website. And I'm not very technically inclined, and so they brought an assessment. And I just got a kick out of it, you know, of all the things that are screwed up on a website that need to be fixed. And met with them yesterday for breakfast, and they're developing a plan on how to drive more people to my website. And I just get the biggest kick out of, they even show up at breakfast with ties on, because they're still working on their degree. They've been friends since elementary, but they both want to start a consulting business around web designs. And so they're using me as an example. So they send me an invoice and want me to look at the invoice, make sure it looks professional. But I just get a kick out of when they tell me that, you know, you got a lot of improvements, Spoiler, that needs to be made. And I go, I'm sure I do.
Well, speaking of website, where can listeners find you online?
JimSpoilerConsulting.com is, we'll take them to the website, and I think it'll be in better shape now when they get there, and even get better as these two coach me along.
And are you on Twitter or any other social media?
You know, I'm on Twitter. My Twitter name is @SporLin, capital S P O R, capital L I N for Lincoln. And, I do things with Facebook as well. I haven't been quite as active as I was, but I try to keep the message out there the best that I can.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was so nice getting the chance to interview you for the podcast today. Thanks so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast.
Well, thank you, Dana. I enjoyed it.